Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. He doesn't always play nice. And that's what gets you the information you need. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
What good is sitting alone in your room? Come hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, old chum.
You know, one of the best things I do in this show is get a chance to share an hour every now and then with Jerry Howarth. We call it the Hour of Howarth. We got a special 2 hours of Howarth today. I have the man himself beside me, Jerry Howarth, and I'm going to read a statement which Jerry has asked me to read on his behalf. Today, I am formally announcing my retirement as the Toronto Blue Jays radio broadcaster after 36 wonderful years behind the microphone. I had every intention of continuing my career into the 2018 season, but my health and stamina and continuing voice issues dictated otherwise. Who knew that I would spend more than half my life in Toronto with my wife, Mary, and our two sons, Ben and Joe, doing what I love to do most, reaching out to friends and fans alike across our great country to talk baseball. I am blessed and I am grateful. I thank everyone who has made this journey of mine so rewarding in every way. Jerry Howarth.
Well, when you read that, I get emotional too. It's been a wonderful ride. Everything that you just read right there came right from my heart. And as this 2 hours goes on, I'll regain my strength. But I think my son, Joe, who's been my best listener, he's 39. And he reached out to me this morning. He says, Dad, we moved here when I was 3. You're the voice that I heard all those years. Hmm. And he reminded me as well, too. He said, it was Tom and Jerry, then Jerry, and now this ends that era. And I hadn't thought too much about that.
We've talked a little bit in the times that you've been in here, and we are going to open the phone lines, by the way, at 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. I know a lot of you want to talk to Jerry Howarth. The phone lines will be open. Tell us a little bit about how you got started in this, because I didn't realize you wanted to be a feature writer for Sports Illustrated until you saw The Error of Your Ways.
That's a good way to get me to laugh right there. Well, actually, Jeff, I've always been a writer and I've enjoyed writing. That goes back to when I had a sixth grade assignment to write about anything I wanted, and I had just been to a 49er playoff game. I was 11 years old, and the 49ers were ahead 27-7, and the Detroit Lions came back and won it 31-27. And as I began to get into sports, I read Sports Illustrated and Curry Kirkpatrick, a name that you're familiar with. He was a sports writer there, a feature writer, and that's what I wanted to do. And eventually, after I graduated from Santa Clara University and put 2 years in as an officer in the U.S. Army in Frankfurt, Germany, I came back and I began to look around for work after I'd been in law school for a half a year. And my alma mater hired me as a fundraiser in the athletic department. And I wanted to then be a fundraiser. But at that particular point, I asked the broadcaster who did the games, he was an alum from Santa Clara, if I could join him to heighten my profile in the Santa Clara, San Jose Bay Area as a fundraiser. And he said no, and he kept saying no, and finally he stopped me one time. He says, Jerry, both of us have the same problem. I said, what's that? And he said, neither of us have a major league voice. Mm. Well, he might have been right. I was 25 and had never thought about broadcasting, never used my voice at all. So I just said, okay. And that night, Jeff, I went out and I bought a tape recorder and a microphone. And for the next 2 years, as I raised money for Santa Clara University, I taped all our football and basketball games as if I were on radio. I wanted to see if I could do that. Because of that challenge, it was kind of laid there in my lap. And after 2 years, people said, why don't you get into broadcasting? And that led to 5 wonderful years in the Coast League and 36 years here.
I do believe the song we played at the start is the song that that was your intro song, was it not, in Tacoma?
It was. Derek Brandeo reached out to me yesterday, and He said, Jerry, I know your favorite songs, and that's Pride and Joy, Stevie Ray Vaughan, and Sweet Caroline, Neil Diamond. He said, are there any others? And I said, well, one that comes to mind, when I was in Tacoma beginning my AAA broadcasting career in 74 and 75, we had a young organist there, and really about a week in for home games, she played Cabaret one night at 7 o'clock, and that's when we went on the air. And I loved having that in the background, so I said to her the next day, would you mind playing that song every day at 7 o'clock? Mm. And that's how I will welcome the audience to Tacoma Baseball, and that's what she did.
We are going to go to the phone lines, 416-870-0590. But it's a long time to do one job, let alone one job, Jerry, where you're in the public eye for, I don't know, 100. Well, you're in the public eye always. I mean, I did a little item for sportsnet.ca, a little story where I said the thing that and other people, I'm sure, said this to you. The thing that has always amazed me about you is, I mean, I can't remember the name of all my daughter's friends. And I'll be with you in the field, and somebody will yell, hey, Jerry, remember we're Dan and Dave from London? And you'll go, ah, the Dawsons. And you'll walk over, and I'm like, and how difficult is it to do one job, even if you love the job, for such a long period of time and not get jaded? You know what I mean? Not mm-hmm. not let it either come across on the air or when you're dealing with fans.
This goes back to when I taped those games in my apartment and listened to them. I said to myself, okay, I just heard this. It can be better. And after 2 years, then I get on the radio in Tacoma. And after every game, and I'm lucky because baseball, you're on every night for, in the Coast League, 5 months, and in Major League Baseball for six. Every game, Jeff, you try to paint it to the best of your ability on that white canvas, and then the next day try to make it better. And I was very fortunate that I was able to do that my entire career and not plateau. I always wanted to provide information, stories, recall. And when you talk about first names like that, it's always been important for me to know somebody's name because first names are magic.
You always write it down, by the way. When you're in here and we take calls, you always write the name down.
Yes, I do. I've got my little notebook here. And so let's say Aaron calls from somewhere and I'll put his name down there. And then later in the conversation, I want to be able to say Aaron, or later when Aaron called 20 minutes ago. I think that's important for people to realize I care. And if I'm going to say anything here today, and I'll start right now, thank you, Toronto. Thank you, Canada, for an opportunity to reach out to you. And when Tom passed away and I became the lead announcer, I began to realize I don't want to just go on as, hi, everybody. It wasn't me. Mm-hmm. And by then, I had built up enough friendships throughout my life here and across Canada on caravans, et cetera, et cetera. It was hello, friends. And that became part of why I really enjoyed what I did, because every day I'm talking to my friends about what's happening on the game down on the field. And I'm not concerned about the one loss record. That takes care of itself. That's out of my control. But what I can control is a good, solid broadcast that every day has a little more variety to it to make it interesting, informative, and entertaining.
Jerry Howarth, the voice of the Blue Jays, he'll always be the voice of the Blue Jays for a lot of us, is stepping down, announcing today he's stepping down after 36 years, just before spring training, as a matter of fact, which is going to be a different spring training. We'll see you down there, I'm sure, won't we?
Not this year, not for spring training, but I will be at the Rogers Center. And I want to tell listeners as well, my health is good. I had the surgery 15 months ago, and they took out the prostate cancerous gland and the tumor. And that's all good. I've had zero clean margins ever since. And I had every intention of going to spring training this year and broadcasting the games, but throughout the last 4.5, nearly 5 months, and it was rumored 3 months ago I was going to retire, and I was not. But I tried to do some mock games and every day tried to work on my voice and stamina, and I just kept hitting the wall. So I thought to myself, to be fair to myself and my health and to make sure that I at least stayed where I was and not have setbacks, or in fairness to the audience too, as far as the best product that I could put on the broadcast, that's when I just, a week ago, decided to step down.
What was the conversation like with Mary when you had that conversation?
She cried. Mm-hmm. So did my son, Joe. In fact, Ben lives in Chicago, so right. We have two boys. And Joe told Mom, he said, this has hit me right to the core, because Joe is a photographer, our professional photographer here, and a lot of his work is from 11 at night to 2 in the morning. He told me, Dad, when you were on the West Coast, those were my those were my games. That's how I kept going. And he said, it's an emotional time for me to not now hear you on the air after my entire life. That's all I've heard. And I thought overall, that was a pretty good summation, too, of where I am, what I've done, the emotions that are involved. And my wife, too, has always been such a great supporter of mine. She's the one who gave up her legal career to come here and find part-time jobs initially and make sure that I was there to do my job, and she put me first. And I appreciated that so much.
We'll have an awful lot of time to talk to Jerry today. He's agreed to be with us for a couple of hours. But as I promised, I want to go to the phone lines because when I think of Jerry, not only do I think the sounds of baseball, but I think of fans. And I know that a lot of you want to call in and talk to Jerry. The numbers are 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. One of the reasons we liked having Jerry in the hours we had him in was because it was a chance to talk to the fans. Adrian in Toronto, go ahead, please. You're our leadoff hitter.
Thanks, Jeff. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Adrian.
I wanted to tell you a story. I was not a baseball fan growing up. I was a hockey fan. And in this world when everything's coming at you so fast, I found myself listening to the games on the radio. And fast forward a few years, after my wife and I had a baby, he was sick and just wouldn't settle. Nothing would settle him. We couldn't settle him at all. And funny enough, I would put him in the car on a Sunday afternoon and drive around listening to the game, and those were some of his most peaceful times. And I'm happy to say now that I didn't miss a game for the last 3 years. I'm a fan because of you.
Well, Adrian, I really appreciate that, and that hits my heart too. People have asked me about games and do I have a preference, and actually, Adrian, my preference was always Saturday and Sunday day games because of the cottage. And I never went to the cottage because I couldn't.
Well, you can do that now.
Yes, I can. I'd heard all about the cottage country, but I also knew that fans were going back and forth on Saturdays and Sundays. And that's when I really became engaged with the fans because I knew that they were listening. And people like Adrian here with that baby, those are stories that really touch me because those were my favorite games too.
Why do you think, Jerry, that there are a lot of us, not even those of us of a certain age. I mean, I have my daughter's friends, people younger than me, and this is not anything against TV people by any stretch of the imagination, but there's still a romance to listening to baseball on the radio. There's still the voice coming through the air in the summer night. You talked about going to the cottage. To me, it's Friday nights when I'm driving up to my sister's cottage north of Ottawa. That's what I think of. It's coffee, and I think of you guys calling the game on the radio. Why is that so timeless?
For two reasons. One, the number of games every day for 6 months, and two, the pace of the game. So the pace of the game allows an audience to do other things, to casually listen, to make sure you give the score so that they're always updated on the score in the inning, and then hear a story or two and get a flavor for the game. And then every day, when you know there's a game, some of the greatest fan letters I always used to receive would be from older fans who would say, Jerry, I'm so happy spring training is back. I hear your voice on the radio, and now I can settle back and enjoy 7 months of baseball. I hadn't thought too much about that, but that was their life. And then at the same time, at the end of those seasons, I would get a fan letter or two saying, well, what do I do now for the wintertime? Mm. And I think the other sports are so fast-paced, hockey, basketball, of course, in particular, football's only once a week, that it's just a different way of listening to the game. And the comfortability of listening to baseball was every day and a nice pace.
Who's the voice you associated with baseball growing up?
Lon Simmons and Russ Hodges.
Yeah.
When I was 12 years old in 1958, the Giants came out to San Francisco, and Russ and Lon were the two broadcasters. And I would listen to them at night. You hear stories about people listening to games at night with the lights out. That was me. I was a kid listening to those games. Another person who was very good to me was Bill King, who was the Oakland Raiders announcer, the Golden State Warriors, and for 25 years, after doing part-time work with the Giants, the Oakland Athletics broadcaster, and rightfully in the Hall of Fame at Cooperstown for that and everything that he did. I'd be listening to the Warriors games, too, at nighttime thinking, how does Bill articulate the game so rapidly yet so clearly, and I can picture it? And Lon was the same way with a sense of humor. I picked up a sense of humor for him. And then later, the late Dick Enberg became a good friend of mine, too. And what I really respected about him, and we talked about this on the field in Anaheim years ago, I said to him, Dick, you and Don Drysdale work so well together, the former pitcher, a Hall of Famer. He said, Jerry, what I try to do is highlight my analyst, and that highlights the broadcast. And I never forgot that.
Let's go to JD in Toronto. How are you, my friend?
Hey, Jerry. Hey, Jeff. How are you guys?
Good.
Good. Today's a sad day, but it's also a day to celebrate your wonderful career. Thank you so much for all your time and your service. I just want to say a quick story. My wife and I took our kids to Boston this summer, and we based our trip around the Blue Jays game. And we got to go down to the field, and my kids were excited to meet players and get autographs. And then I saw Jerry Howarth, and I started freaking out. you came over, and you signed our shirts, all of our jerseys. And, you know, we saw you later in the elevator, and you're like, hey, it's my favorite Canadian family. And it's just, it was a great moment. I listen to you all the time. Thank you so much for all you've done. You're awesome, and we're going to miss you.
Well, JD, thank you. And you just said a word right there that, for me, is the epitome of life. Celebrate. I always tell people that I've enjoyed every day, and if my career ended today, which it is, or my life ended today, which it could, we never know, we're not promised tomorrow, I would want people to celebrate my life rather than say, well, I'm sorry for your loss. No, there's nothing to be sorry about. When you go at a young age like John Cerruti or some others like that, and even Tom at 66, that's a little bit different. But when you're 71 and next month about to turn 72, it's a celebration of life and all that I was able to do. And I always thank God, too, for the platform, Jeff, that I was given to then make a difference. And that's been so engaging for me and enlightening to be able to do all that. And if somebody, I just went to Northern Secondary and talked to their high school a couple of days ago. And I always tell these kids, and I told my high school basketball teams the same thing, if somebody would have told me in high school that I would be a major league broadcaster for 36 years, I would have said no way. But the answer is yes way, and for two reasons. One, get as much education as you can beyond high school, and I was able to do that, graduating from the University of Santa Clara. And then go follow your heart and do what you want to do. And I also was able to do that. So celebrate, JD, is the word I like to focus on today.
Oh, we've got another caller. I don't even know Travis. Do I need to introduce this gentleman to Toronto people? Let's see. People have heard of Joe Bowen, I think. How you doing, Joe?
I'm good, and I'm bitterly disappointed today. But Jerry, I just wanted to call and tell you what a pleasure it has been for my summers driving around with my boys to baseball games because they are avid players, all four of them. And you have been the first button on our radio for, well, as long as I can remember. So God bless you, young man. I think this is just a guise so that you can get back to coaching basketball.
Now, Joe, I want you to stay on the phone because for our audience, Joe and I came here together 36 years ago because
well,
of
not in the same train.
But from the same person, Len Bramson, who was the head of the HUPEC Sports Network, he reached out to me and to Joe in Sudbury at the same time. I was in Salt Lake City, and he brought us both here together, Joe to broadcast Maple Leafs games and myself Blue Jays games. And I just wanted to honor those people now who are not with us, and that's Len Bramson. I know Joe will make a note of this, too, here in just a moment. Sue Rayson, who worked there right there with him. And, of course, Tom Cheek, who is gone now as well. And Joe, I think you and I would agree that those three, and in particular Len and Sue, meant everything to us to help us get our career started to where we are today.
Absolutely. And you could add Vicki McKee and Paul Wortley, others that were with Telemedia at the time. They gave a couple of young broadcasters an opportunity to fulfill a dream. And it was really kind of ironic that we both arrived at the same time and have been actually the listeners have put up with us, Jerry, I guess, and let us stay, which is awfully nice of them. We've become a pair of old slippers. We're just comfortable to be around.
Well, there's some other names too, and you mentioned Vicky, of course, and that was great. Nelson Millman was tremendous for me as not just necessarily a boss, but a friend. And Doug Ackhurst was another who comes to mind. These were people in the front office who, Don Pagnutti, people who had our backs when we first got started and allowed us to do our work and not necessarily have to look over our shoulder. And today that's continued here with Dave Cadeau, who has been tremendous for me, not just as someone who sits across the desk from me when we talk, but as a friend and a mentor and somebody who encourages you to be yourself and you go out and continue to do what you want to do. And Joe and I were surrounded by people like that, too, who meant a difference. Paul Williams is another one who became a great friend and ally. So I know Joe and I share that all together.
Yeah, it was a different time, and it was a you know, telemedia was more. It felt like family, didn't it, Jerry? And all of these people that have helped us along. I mean, it's been a wonderful, wonderful ride, and I am I'm just thrilled that you and your family are going to get some time to enjoy summers for a change. I at least got to enjoy the summers while we were parading around here in the middle of the winter with the hockey team. But to be able to enjoy a nice summer and maybe get up to a cottage and everything else, I think you're going to really enjoy it. And we're going to miss you. I know that desperately. And now I guess we can start the campaign to get Jerry Howarth alongside Tom Cheek in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Well, Joe, thank you very much. And I was driving in here last night to stay at a downtown hotel. I never thought my first road trip this year would be 2 days in downtown Toronto. But I heard you broadcast that Maple Leafs game, too, and the second goal and on their way to a big win against Tampa Bay. So, Joe, keep up your great work.
Thank you, Jerry, and all the best to you and Mary, the family, the boys, and God bless you.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Joe Bowen, the great Joe Bowen, the voice of the Leafs. There's quite a camaraderie between play-by-play guys, isn't there?
There is, and there are just a few of us, and that's a small fraternity in baseball. I don't know really too many of the hockey announcers, maybe two or three beyond Joe. And when he first came up here, Ron Hewitt was the longtime broadcaster. And I can remember going to Maple Leaf Gardens, and of course, in California, where I grew up, there was no hockey at that time. And when I first walked into Maple Leaf Gardens and came through an exit and looked out onto the ice, it took my breath away. That's only happened a couple of times. Once was Fenway Park, and the other time was the old Yankee Stadium back in 1967. But then I was later asked to go upstairs and see Ron Hewitt and Joe, and I was in what they call, the perch or something like that?
Gondola.
The gondola.
Right.
And I was up there looking around and thinking, this is Maple Leaf Gardens. This is the Toronto Maple Leafs and their rich history. And so that's where hockey became a part of my life, too.
Best press box you ever worked in? The one that has the most meaning, the best press box?
Well, for me, it's Fenway Park. It was built in 1912, and that's what makes it special. And every time I walk in there, it's so intimate. It's usually full with 37,000 fans. You're as close to the field as you're ever going to get, save for what used to be Tiger Stadium, and you felt like you were right there on the backstop behind home plate. But Fenway Park is my favorite. It's close. It's spontaneous. You're trying to beat the Red Sox. The crowds are into it. In the eighth inning, they play Sweet Caroline, which I always enjoyed and backed off for our audience, too. But I would have to say Fenway Park is my favorite place and ballpark to have gone to. After that, I like Camden Yards in Baltimore with that warehouse that they kept there in right center field. And closer to home, Safeco Field. When I say closer to home, I don't mean that literally. I just mean newer ballparks. Those are my favorites. Angel Stadium comes to mind, too. And then, of course, working the home games here, and especially, Jeff, 15 and 16 were the best years for me regarding crowds, young, passionate, and enthusiastic who began cheering when a pitcher went out to warm up in the bullpen. I'd never heard that before, even including 92 and 3. Those were great years.
Let's go to Walter in Mississauga. How are you, my friend?
Well, I'll start with you, Mr. Blair. It's been a long time, sir, and thank you for having me on the show. And
no problem.
I'm sorry and excited at the same time for you to put on this show for Mr. Howard. Second, Mr. Howarth, I don't know about a lot of fans out there, but I'm a pretty emotional mess right now, and I'm not trying to say it as a suck or someone who needs their sus, but you're Blue Jays. Like, you're the guy. Like, if and I want to state a few comments and let you guys go, but I don't mean any disrespect to the baseball world whatsoever. But thank you for letting us say goodbye.
Oh, well,
Mr. Cheek never did, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But you, Mr. Howarth, you've given that to us. And as a passionate Blue Jay fan and a human being, you get to go out on top. No, there's no championship, but you did see those days. You know, small, old, all alike, male, female, doesn't matter the race. We think of Blue Jays, we think of Jerry Howarth. Thank you.
Walter, thank you very much. And your emotions fill my heart, too, with emotions. And I know a lot of people feel that way today. It's an emotional time. And when you say Tom and Jerry, that's what my son Joe was talking about today, that Jerry ends the Tom and Jerry era that began really in 1982, my first full season, 36 years later. And to end on a little bit lighter note, Walter, when you say Mr. Howarth, I've always told fans, including my basketball teams, do not call me Mr. Howarth. I'm going to let you do it here because it's already said and done. And for even players, I remember Gabe Gross and Colby Rasmus from the South, where they were brought up to say sir, and they would say sir and Mr. Howarth, and I would look them right in the eye and I would say hi, Jerry, and they would kind of fumble around. I'd say hi, Jerry, and they would go hi, Jerry. Okay, then we're done. We've already broken through right now. And I would tell my basketball players, you call me either Coach or Jerry, not Mr. Howarth, and that's where we've gone from there. But Walter, your emotions fill my heart today, and I thank you for your comments.
But it's remarkable, isn't it, how many people still call you Mr. Howarth?
Yes, they do. And the only person that I insist call me Mr. Howarth is Scott Moore,
well,
who had me broadcast 30 television games years ago with Rob Falls. And guess who just walked into the studio?
Surprise, surprise. I kind of expected we'd see a Scott Moore.
I've been listening for the last half hour, and I just wanted to come in and it's an emotional day for everybody here to say thank you on behalf of Rogers, on behalf of Sportsnet, on behalf of the fan, and most importantly, not your fans, but as you said, your friends.
That's right.
You asked Jerry a question, why a radio play-by-play guy makes such a difference. And I'd answer it this way. When you go to see a great movie, quite often it's the soundtrack that you remember. And you go out and buy the soundtrack. And Jerry's been the soundtrack of the Blue Jays for almost 40 years. And it's been a tremendous soundtrack.
Well, Scott, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I think that's the value of radio, too. When Jeff asked me about announcers growing up, I never really heard Vin Scully, but his enthusiasm, his love for the game, his passion came out every game. He was always high energy, and he broadcast 67 years, which was remarkable. And when you say that, too, I feel a great sense of pride that my voice was one of those.
So I want to let the fans have their say, but I just wanted to say one other thing about Jerry. So I often will go to the ballpark with some clients or some VIPs, and I'll take them on a tour, and we always stop in the radio booth.
Right.
And in a commercial break, Jerry will always get up, make sure he introduces himself, and take a picture with them. And that's the kind of guy Jerry has been, and I wish you well in your retirement. We are going to miss you. You have tough shoes to fill, but thank you for the last almost 40 years. You've been the soundtrack of the Blue Jays.
Well, Scott, I thank you for that. And you did something for me, too, that had not happened until that particular moment. When you sat down with me and invited me to broadcast 30 games on TV with Rob Falls, I had never really met the television people. And you introduced me then to cameramen, people behind the scenes, those in the truck, producers, executives. Jeff Mather comes to mind, and so many others, who then became a part of my life from that moment on. And so the TV people became a fraternity with me as well, thanks to you.
Thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Moore. Scott Moore, president of Sportsnet.
Scott, thanks a lot.
Jerry, you're eyeballing him as he goes out.
The only person who can call me Mr. Howarth.
That's right. The only person who can call you Mr. Howarth and get away with it. Jerry Howarth announcing this morning that he's stepping down after 36 seasons. God, it seems remarkable even just to say that. 36 seasons of Blue Jays baseball. We'll continue to take your calls. We'll step away and take a break. Come back with more of the Jeff Blair Show with Jerry Howarth on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of the Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now back to the Hour of Howarth on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
But thank you for letting us say goodbye. Well, Mr. Cheek never did, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But you, Mr. Howarth, you've given that to us. And as a passionate Blue Jay fan and a human being, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Just one of the comments we've heard this morning. We're opening our phone lines to callers, 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Jerry Howarth announcing at 9 o'clock on this show that he will be retiring as the voice of the Blue Jays after 36 seasons. We'll have Jerry in studio till 11 o'clock. We'll have some special guests, but as I said, I really want to turn this over to the fans and give them a chance to talk to Jerry. So,
I just want to say,
yes.
Scott Moore just came in here and talked about soundtrack. That was Walter, one of our callers here in the first segment. And in the background was Pride and Joy, mm-hmm. really my favorite song by Stevie Ray Vaughan. And when I think of my career, I think of just that, Pride and Joy.
Christian in Toronto, you're on with Jerry Howarth.
Hi, good morning, Jerry, and good morning, Jeff.
Hi, Christian.
Hi, how are you, Jerry? I just want to thank you, Jerry, for everything you have done as the voice of the Blue Jays. I always, when I'm not at home or anything like that, I know that I could turn on the radio and have the broadcast as a big Blue Jay fan for all my life. And I also want to thank you for being part of the community for all these years, including my brother's basketball coach, Orlando.
Oh, yes.
So I thank you for everything you've done for him and for the community and as the voice of the Blue Jays. And I had the pleasure to meet you, and it was such an honor and a great day that I got to meet you. And thank you very much, Jerry.
You are more than welcome. Orlando Carius was one of the best players I ever coached. And actually, as I retired 2 years ago, he was on that team, the last team that I coached, in 18-9 and played for the city championship, and Orlando was a big part of that. And you remember, too, at that particular point, the NBA came in here for a shooting contest.
Right.
It was open to everybody. Yeah. And Orlando won it.
Really?
He won the three-point shooting contest, and later there was a picture right there at the NCARE Center where Orlando was, and the two of us were right there. He was holding the trophy, and one of my proudest moments as well.
Go ahead, Christian.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And because of that, I have a son, too, and he's doing, because of Orlando, he looks up to Orlando a lot. And I think because of that, he picked up a basketball a couple years ago, and he's doing really well also in basketball. So thank you, Jerry, for everything. And I had such a great time that day. I got to meet you and go out to the ball game. And thanks for everything for the community. And just being a big Blue Jay fan was awesome. And I wish you all the best in your retirement and all the best to your family. And thank you for everything you did for my brother.
Well, good you're suffering. Welcome, Christian. And thank you. Say hi to Orlando and Isabel. And
I will tell them that you say hi, okay?
Okay, that's great. And that's part of, too, the community for me, Jeff. I was able to coach basketball for 25 years. 5 years at middle school, at Islington Middle School, the first year with my son, Joe. And then after those 5 years, 20 years at Etobicoke Collegiate, where I was the Bantam coach, junior coach, and senior coach. And I wouldn't trade those years for anything. An opportunity to mentor and teach and have this kind of feedback from a player's brother. Because for me, it was all about academics first, practice hard second, and then the games third and last. And if you win, you win. If you don't, make sure you put your best foot forward and play as hard as you can. And for 25 years, I'll have a lot of players, too, who will say, thank you, coach, and I appreciate that.
I got to ask you, did you play basketball growing up? Like, was that always a second sport for you? Or
no, it wasn't. When I was in high school, I played baseball, and then on the freshman team, I was the guard, mm-hmm. and I played backup quarterback on the junior varsity team. But after a couple of years, baseball became my sport, and I started to play baseball in high school 12 months a year. There was a semi-pro team in the summer, another one in the winter in a nearby city called Fairfax. And so for the last 2 years, all I did was play baseball, and then went to the University of Santa Clara, played a couple of games, and that's when the competition caught up with me. But no, basketball became just kind of an avocation later on to actually work with kids.
Well, when you think of Tom Cheek and Jerry Howarth, you think of, well, you know, as I've said, I mean, I grew up in Manitoba. Herb Carneal was my first baseball voice. Dave Van Horn, then it was Tom and Jerry. Tom, unfortunately, is no longer with us, but Shirley Cheek has called up. And Shirley, thanks so much for joining us. It's great to hear from you. I hope you're doing well. And say hi to Jerry Howarth.
Hello there, Jerry, and hi to you also, Travis. Or I'm sorry, who was I talking
Jeff.
To now? Oh, Jeff, sorry about that. But nice to talk to all these people in Toronto.
Well, Shirley, thank you. And you have a distinctive voice, and I've known you for years.
Well, yes, we won't say how many years, Jerry. A long time, let's put it that way, right?
Yes, and when I got started, it was Tom and Jerry, and I remember the first news conference that as I came in from Salt Lake City, and someone yelled out, "Hey, Tom and Jerry," and the cartoon. And when I began to think about it, your husband was big like Tom, a big cat, and there was this little mouse called Jerry, and what a team we made. And but surely for you and your kids, Tom Jr., and of course, Lisa and Jeff, it was family first, and your family was a lot to me, and so was Tom, of course. And then we were together in those last few years that were difficult for you with Tom passing away. But I want you to know that, and our fans too, that we've kept in touch all these years, and my wife Mary with you too, and your kids and grandkids, and I enjoyed our relationship and family and still do.
Well, that's nice. Every spring training, we had something to look forward to. Mary coming down, you coming down. I think last year, Mary and I got together the day after she arrived. So always had lunch at beautiful Bon Appetit. And it was always nice catching up. And then Mary and I would do a few things during the time that she was here. And I think we occasionally met for breakfast, Jerry, with you.
Shirley, what is the key to the care and feeding of a broadcaster? What is it? I mean, obviously it's got to take patience. As my wife will say, you got to take patience. But what, I mean, you know, it's a job where these guys are away from home an awful lot. You know, there's a certain pressure with it. What's the key to helping them along, or as I said, to the care and feeding of them?
Well, I think it's just a key is just to be supportive of them. And you really feel yourself as a female, a male, the wife, you're the chauffeur driver, you're the running to the dry cleaners, you make sure that everything is done and ready for him to go on the next trip and just be supportive of him. So I think just that's kind of it in a nutshell.
It is, and this is an opportunity for me to, Shirley, highlight my wife, Mary, because from the very beginning, when I was offered my first broadcasting job in Tacoma, Mary had just graduated from the University of Santa Clara's law school. And so instead of, with the California bar examination, which she took and passed, instead of looking forward to a career right there, she said, let's go to Tacoma. So she's up there for 2 years working in the prosecuting attorney's office, and then I moved to Salt Lake City with her, and she said, let's go. And then later to Toronto for 36 years. And she's the rock. You talk about a rock. And Mary was that rock and still is to this day. And I told you before here when I first talked about this and making my announcement, it was Mary who cried on the couch. And I had to give her a hug and told her that this will be okay. This is the right decision for me. It'll be the right decision for us. But that's the feelings that Shirley's talking about right there, where the emotions come out from your spouse because of all she did for you.
Right. And we spend so much time that baseball became our life, too, you know, and we worked around our kids and traveled with the teams. We were so lucky in the early years being able to travel with the team as a family at least once a year. And then as the years went on, Mary traveling with you at times, meeting you in New York or Boston or whatever. And I can understand how she feels with the tears because it's your life, you know, you've dedicated your life to it. But now you have time to spend with your grandchildren, your beautiful grandchildren.
That's right. We have a couple of grandkids. And Shirley, as you talk right there, you know, I think of some stories with Tom. And one that comes to mind immediately was that I came to the Rogers Center years ago. Of course, it was called the Sky Dome. And the day before, there'd been a golf tournament. So I get to the parking lot and somebody says, "Did you see Tom smiling the way he was smiling?" I said, "No, I haven't been to the booth yet." Got to the elevator and the elevator operator said, "Did you see Tom? He's glowing." Got to the press box and the media person right there handling the press box, "Did you see your partner and how much he's laughing and smiling?" I said, "No, not yet." I walk into the radio booth and there's Tom. I said, "Tom, everybody tells me you've been beaming. What's up?" And he smiled and he said, "Yesterday I got into Cito's wallet."
He always loved that story.
He made a putt on the last hole and collected like $20 and he was so happy.
Yes, that's right. He loved to go out and play golf with Cito, and Jeff Ross was another one that he played with a lot. And sometimes Tommy Craig would be thrown in there, but they kind of all laughed. Tommy wasn't the best golf player, so not that Tom was, but I think Tommy was the low man on the totem pole. So but fun times.
It really was.
Shirley, we're going to let you run. Really appreciate you calling in. Thanks so much, and you be well.
And you take care, Jerry, and I'll miss seeing you down here, but we'll see you in Toronto maybe, okay?
All right, thanks, Shirley, and say hi to your kids for me.
I will, and you likewise.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Shirley Cheek joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. We'll have time for one more call before we break. Let's go to Peter in Erin. How are you, Peter?
I'm well, Jeff. How are you?
Good, good.
Good. Nice to speak with both of you. Jerry, as everybody, we're all grateful and celebrate your time with the Blue Jays. I grew up just past Hamilton, and on weekends we would travel to horse jumping, show jumping competitions north of Toronto. And my greatest memories from the time I was 12 or whatever years old, right till this day, is driving home on weekends, listening to your voice. And I'm very grateful. It's a great memory. And, you know, keep it short. Thank you so much. And it was great having you as our broadcaster. Thanks, guys.
Well, Peter, thank you very much. And, you know, when Peter, like Walter there, fills with emotion, so do I. And really, Jeff, for me, it was never about me. It was, how can you reach out and inform and entertain the audience every day? And to be able to do that for a year is something, but for 36 years, it's the people like Peter here that you're really most grateful for your career, to be able to touch lives like that, make it interesting for them, informative too, and things to talk about, and do it for 7 and sometimes 8 months. And that was the thrill of my career for me.
How do you not make it about yourself? Because you don't do that. The really good ones don't do that. How do you? Because again, it's 36 seasons. It's been you for 36 seasons. How do you avoid not making it about yourself?
I think it's just your makeup and how you grew up and people in your life who influenced you. And at the University of Santa Clara, Jesuit school for 4 years, I was mentored and really so influenced by Father John Shanks. Next to my father, the most influential person in my life. And when I graduated from Santa Clara with a degree in economics and a minor in philosophy and theology, it was really the interior life that I developed. And it wasn't about me. And Father Shanks would always tell us, go out and love, praise, and serve the Lord with what you do. It's not about you. And I never forgot that. And my intent was to make sure that I was there as just kind of a go-between, the field and the audience, to pass on to them what was happening. And I was very grateful for Father Shanks in the beginning to help form that philosophy of life.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, a special guest is going to be joining us all the way from Dunedin, Florida. I wonder who that could be.
Let me manage to think about that.
It's the Jeff Blair Show with Jerry Howarth on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Because hockey hasn't completely taken over your life yet. Subscribe to podcasts of Hockey Central at Noon through iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. There's no such thing as a reasonable listening level. Just blaring. It's time for the Hour of Howarth on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
know that I can turn on the radio and have the broadcast as a big Blue Jay fan for all my life. And I also want to thank you for being part of the community for all these years, including my brother's basketball coach, Orlando.
Oh, yes.
So I thank you for everything you've done for him and for the community and as the voice of the Blue Jays.
Welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show, the second hour of the Jeff Blair Show, the 2 hours. I guess we're going to call it the 2 hours of Jerry Howarth. Jerry Howarth in studio with us for another hour. Jerry, of course, announcing today that he is stepping down after 36 seasons behind the microphone as the voice of the Toronto Blue Jays.
And I might add another favorite song of mine, Glenn Campbell's A Gentle on My Mind, and I appreciate Derek putting that up here to start this hour.
Jerry's got his own playlist.
Yes, I do.
Jerry's got his own playlist. We know what you like around here. Well, let's not waste any time, shall we? Let's go down to lovely Dunedin, Florida. At least, is he in Dunedin or is he still at home in Texas? We'll
find
out.
Beautiful Dunedin.
You're in beautiful Dunedin. John Gibbons, field manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm a little bit shocked, though. I got some news, about our great friend Jerry, but I understand he's on the air right here with us, huh?
He's right here.
John, I would have reached out to you along with some others, but somehow we were able to keep this a secret until 9 o'clock this morning. But let me just say here, first of all, John Gibbons is one of my best friends, and what he does in his life outside of baseball is admirable. Patience, family, and that's what attracted me to John in the beginning, and his outlook on the game of baseball and how he also gets players respect and they play hard for him. And John, I appreciate all that in you, and now I'm the one that's starting to get emotional because of our friendship.
Jerry, I appreciate all those kind words, and we go back a long way. I mean, you go back further, with most of fans in Toronto, Canada, but it was an honor to meet you years ago. We became very, very good friends, and deeper than baseball ever was. We went beyond that and shared a lot of things together, and went through some ups and downs together. And you've always been a big supporter of mine, and I will never forget that. And the beauty of your baseball career, Jerry, you always called it like it is, man. You never sugarcoated anything, but you were always fair. And I just hope I see you around quite a bit. We'll stay in great touch, but I hope you still come out to the ballpark quite a bit.
Well, I will. I'll tell you a funny story too, Jeff, with John on the line here. When J.P. Ricciardi took over, he brought John in as a friend. They were together in the Met system and roommates when they first started, I believe, in 1980. And so John was out in the bullpen. He was a bullpen catcher, because Ricciardi eventually knew what he wanted to do with John. So then John was the first base coach. So that first year, Carlos Tosca was the manager, and I kept talking to Carlos at the batting cage. And then one day, Tosca left, and up to my elbow comes John Gibbons. And he looks at me and he says, "Jerry, I know some baseball too." And that started that started our friendship. We both kind of laughed out loud because we really hadn't really had an opportunity to talk with one another. But then John told me too. He said, "Jerry, remember, in baseball, you can talk about anything. It's not black and white. There's always something you can talk about. It's always a game you can debate. You can go over the strategies. It's never set in concrete terms. Talk to me about anything and everything, because that's what baseball is." And I never forgot that, because that lent itself to all kinds of conversations where other managers sometimes would be a little standoffish and say, "We're not going there," or "I can't talk about that," or "I don't particularly want to hear about that story from last night." Well, John was never that way. John was as open with me as he is as players and coaches, and that's what makes John special.
John, the relationship between the club broadcaster and manager is a special one, isn't it? And people, I always tell people, when you travel with the team, when you get to see guys in the chart or around the hotel, when you get to talk to them, you accumulate a lot of things that, quite frankly, other people have no business knowing. It's an important relationship for manager, isn't it, though, the club broadcaster, so that you don't want any mixed messages getting out.
Right. Yeah. Jeff, no doubt. And, you know, we're with each other every day. And, you know, that's why, you know, Jerry and I had something different. You know, we were good friends. You know, we enjoyed being around each other. You know, it just wasn't all baseball. You know, it was, you know, he took a, you know, big interest in my family, you know, and say he did. He does, you know, and he's still here. He's not going anywhere. But, you can always trust him, you know, because, you know, yeah, they see things on the field that, you know, that are, you know, that goes on with the team that, you know, everybody doesn't need to know about. And so you have to be able to trust him, to trust those individuals. But yeah, there's just something we hit it off. I can't totally explain everything. You know, Jerry would always, every day comes to the ballpark with enthusiasm. You know, not everybody does that. You know, I mean, I don't come every day enthusiastically. But Jerry always did. You know, that brings a smile to the guy's face. And, you know, we didn't always agree on everything. We had our moments, like everybody does. But, you know, he always perked you up, and I knew one thing. He's always going to give it his best effort that night on the air. And I know all his fans out there over the years can truly appreciate that, because that's what he did. He was always prepared. You know, it was just I'm sad today, you know, like everybody else out there is. And, but we'll, you know, we'll see plenty of each other. We'll, you know, Jerry and I love going to movies. You know, I'm sure we'll go to some movies together, because we both actually live pretty simple lives.
That's right. John and I like just the basic everydayness of life. Take it in, go with the flow, put your head on the pillow at night and say, thank you, that was a great day, and let's move forward. John also said something right there, too. You can be best friends with somebody, as we are, but you're still going to have on occasion your moments, because when you're up in the booth, things have to be said in certain ways. And so when John says that, the thing I really appreciated about him is that when there were a couple of moments like that, you quickly get past them because you talk it over real fast and you see, well, this is where I was coming from and this is where I was coming from. But the best part of all of that is that when John would share information with me, then when I went on the air and confidently used it as my own, I knew it had a purpose. I knew it meant something rather than Jerry just going off on his own tangent.
You've got to know what not to say as well as what to say.
And John always made that easy for me, too. But overall, when you look at his body of work and mine, two professionals who really did the very best they could each day, and that's all you can ask.
And John, I just got to jump in here because you're not going to believe this. But Jerry Howarth is wearing dress shoes. I just saw that. He's not wearing white sneakers.
It's getaway day.
It's getaway day, he said.
That's right. He wears those dress shoes one day a year, not many more than that. And then it's right. Then he would throw on his nursing shoes.
There goes our
pair every year.
There goes our friendship. You just called those my nursing shoes.
Well, that's the only other place I've seen them. It's the only other place I've seen them too. So
yeah, no, I only wear them on getaway days. All the rest would be my Skechers, and happy about that. And see, John and I are able to laugh with each other, and his laugh, I can almost imitate his laugh, like some people can imitate my voice. But John, let me just say this: I won't be in spring training. I will be there opening day because I want to see Brandy Halliday, who I've known for years. I'll see you then and many times down on the field. But, John, you are one of the best inspirations for me and friends that I've ever had in my life, let alone baseball.
Well, pal, I love you, man, and I'm going to miss you out there daily. I'm just worried for Mary that she's got to deal with you every day. Now, that's the one we need to pray for. So.
Yeah, Mary's already.
It's been a pleasure, pal. It really has.
Take care, John.
Yeah, and say hi to Julie for me.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Hi, right, John.
John Gibbons, manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. Spring training starts tomorrow.
I know. I can't believe it. Just one last thought, and I've said this publicly on the air a number of times. Managers, the greatest competition in baseball, in my opinion, is not down on the field. It's among the general managers who bring the players to the manager to best bring them to the playoffs and the World Series. And when John Gibbons does what he does in 15 and 16, outstanding years, and then does the same thing in 2017, but there are injuries and other factors, it's not the manager. And I want the fans to know that. The competition is upstairs.
416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. Let's go to Annie in Scarborough. You're on with Jerry Howarth. Hello, Annie.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Jerry. How are you guys doing? Jeff, I just want to thank you for allowing Jerry's baseball friends to join you in celebrating his career today.
Believe me, it's my pleasure.
I'm really honored to be able to add my two cents. My husband and I love the Jeff Blair Show, and the only thing we love more are Jerry's broadcasts. Jerry, I think Toronto Police Services must be cleaning up car accidents all over the city today. For millions of us, your voice will forever be synonymous with Blue Jays and with the summer. You fill our minds with your imagery and your insights. Sorry, very emotional here. You give us pure baseball joy. And whether we're driving or gardening or working out at the cottage, or you're with us through our, you are the soundtrack not only of the Blue Jays, but the soundtrack of our lives. And we love your broadcast so much that we even, when we're watching games on TV, we turn down the volume, don't tell Buck and Tabby.
And
we crank up the radio. Or when we're at games, we take our little rabbit ear transistor radio, and, well, not transistor anymore, I guess, and our earbuds, because without you, the experience just isn't the same. So we love you. We wish you all the very best in your retirement, but we hope that this isn't going to mean full retirement and that Rogers and Sportsnet and the Blue Jays organization will make you broadcaster emeritus, just like Paul Beeston, who is now president emeritus. So thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Jeff. We love you.
Thanks, Andy. Take care.
Okay, thank you.
That is so nice. That is a great friend of mine, Annie Tersini, and her husband, Ange. And I met them in spring training last year, and they were there at 10 o'clock watching batting practice, and that's how loyal the fans that they are. And I got to know them over this last year, and their passion for baseball, the broadcast, and their loyalty to me. And this then is a little segue. A couple of years ago, I decided that I would venture into trying to write a book. Mm-hmm. And the first year, which was after the 2016 season, it was October baseball, and I wrote 50,000 words. And then this last year, I wrote another 50,000 and have finished the book. And Annie was one who spent countless hours, as I would send her my work, to edit it and to look at it and to refine it and to make it better. It's now in the hands of Penguin Publishing and Nick Garrison, and I'm hoping someday that Nick, yes, you know him.
Yeah,
from the background of the books that you have written. But I can't thank Annie enough, not only for her friendship, her love for me and the broadcast, her husband, Ange, but overall for what she did to help make a book better. And hopefully next March, during the baseball season, that book will come out, and I'll be happy to be a part of it. And Annie's a big part of it, too, along with a woman named Joan Levy-Earle, who really inspired me to write the book initially. And because of her writing 13 books, she said, Jerry, I think you should write a book. And she kind of encouraged me and pushed me in that direction. And I couldn't be happier with the last 2 years of what I was able to put down, 20,000 words on my life growing up and 80,000 words on stories about the Blue Jays. And that's what it is, a book of stories, not just the Blue Jays did this and the Blue Jays did that, that I think overall will be a nice legacy for me to pass on to the fans.
Absolutely. And I can tell you that it's a book that will be well-received and much anticipated, and see it in next spring.
Well, I just saw your last book, too, and how well that sold in 2014, and Nick was a big part of that, too. And it's all baseball, and that's what you want, but this will be all baseball as Jerry views it. And, Jeff, it's my one-and-done book, and I was happy to be able to put it together, never dreaming that it would even happen.
Let's go to Eddie in Fort Erie. How are you, my friend?
Good, Jeff. Hello, Jerry. I just wanted to say thank you for everything that you've done for the Blue Jays. I mean, you're the one of the people I look forward to when I listen on the radio. You know, whether I'm at the beach or I'm outside in the garden just enjoying the sun, I always look forward to hearing your voice. And I just wanted to say one of my favorite calls that you did was Game 5 of the Division Series against Texas, because, you know, as a baseball fan, I always, you know, dream of the day, you know, the Blue Jays will be in the playoffs and we're finally in, and see that and hear your voice on that for that one big swing when Bautista hit the home run. And I was, you know, crying. I was happy. And then when Asuna struck out Venable, I was like, you know, I was crying even more. And, you know, that really meant a lot to me as a baseball fan to hear your voice on the playoffs, because I never got a chance to hear you do any of the games in the playoffs when I was during the World Series times, because I wasn't I didn't know anything about baseball then. But I was just so happy to hear your voice and call that big time game and hear the Blue Jays go into the ALCS for the first time. That's one of the things I'm going to remember about your announcing how much, you know, it meant, you know, and I'm really going to miss your voice.
Well, Eddie, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And really, as Tom passed away in October of 2005, and I was able to ascend to the lead role, I wasn't sure how it was going to go. And after about a week, I felt pretty comfortable that it would be okay. And that call with Bautista, really, it was kind of the essence for me of my favorite call as the lead announcer. The next year was pretty good, too, with Edwin Encarnacion beating Baltimore in the wild card game. But what I really liked, Jeff, the most about the Bautista call was that with five simple words, "Yes, sir, there she goes," I didn't talk for 40 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, to me, what radio is all about. It's not about me talking over the crowd. Radio is about the crowd. And for 40 seconds, including Eddie listening, we all took that in. And then the Blue Jays take the lead 6-3.
One of my favorite phrases is when you hear an announcer basically say, "Let's let the crowd take you home. Let's let the crowd tell you what happened."
And I would use those exact words when a Marcus Stroman or a Roy Halladay, or it didn't matter who was on the mound, and taken out in a game that he was up by one run. It was late in the game. He had pitched an heroic game. And then I would say, "Here comes John Gibbons to take him out. Let's let the crowd take Roy Halladay, or let's let the crowd take Marcus Stroman to the dugout." And then back off.
We asked Jerry who some of his favorite players were, and of course, you cover 36 seasons, you develop a lot of favorite players, but the first name that came to mind was Tom Hanke, and guess what? We've managed to track down Tom Hanke. Tom Hanke, you're on with Jerry Howarth. Jerry's announced that he's stepping down today after 36 years.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's tough to take. Jerry was there my whole career and was not only a great announcer, it's kind of like Jack Buck stepping down in St. Louis, but just one of my best friends in the game. He will be sorely missed. I know Blue Jay fans will miss him. I'll miss that "yes, sir" on the air and all those good memories. It brings back great memories just hearing his voice just now. So I'm sad to hear that, but you know what? Time moves on, and we all go on to bigger and better things, and I'm sure Jerry's headed that way too.
Well, Tom, it's good to hear your voice, and we just had John Gibbons on. And so when I talk about two of my best friends in the game, we're talking about two people, Jeff, who believe in family first. And there's so many stories that I could relate to Tom Hanke and his wife, Kathy, and their kids, and especially Amanda, who was born with Down syndrome, and how Tom and Kathy, with their other three kids, have supported Amanda to give her and make her the happiest daughter in the world, and also then to bring awareness to kids who are born with Down syndrome and to raise money for those kids. And one time, and Tom has an annual golf tournament every year in the winter, and he asked me to come over one time to MC it, which I did. But for Tom Hanke, it's never about Tom. In fact, it's all about his family first, and that's what I appreciate in everybody, because baseball is a profession that is a business, and you have to spend every day to stay in the game. And when Tom Hanke, in his last year with the Cardinals, saved 36 of 38 games and then retired, well, he went out on top as well. And Tony La Russa asked him, "Hey, can't you stay? Look what you just did." And Tom said, "No, I want to be with my family." That's what makes him special.
Tom, that decision, you know, Jerry talked about it and about how you wanted to be with your family. What's the key to not looking back when you make a decision like that?
Well, you know, you look back and I put it the way my dad always said, "Hey, did you do the best you could?" You know, I feel my career, I did the best I could every day I went out. Now, I wasn't always successful, but pretty good part of the time I was. you know, looking back, I don't have any regrets retiring when I did. Yeah, I could have maybe played another year or two with limited gas in the tank, but you know what? I always admired guys that could retire when they still were in control of their game. And fortunately, 1995, I was with the Cardinals and ended up winning the Rolaids Relief Award that year. Did some things that kind of had eluded me my whole career, and I give the Cardinals a lot of credit for keeping me in the games, because we were out of it by the All-Star break, and they could have easily sat me and just let me go on, you know, without getting a lot of the things that I was after in my career. And getting to play in the All-Star game was unbelievable that year, too. But it was a good time to go. My kids were starting high school, and you know, I'd been away 16 years, you know, and I'd always told my wife that, you know, if baseball got in the way of our family, then it was time for me to go. And that wasn't necessarily the case. They supported any decision I was going to make, but it just felt right for me. And yeah, I could have hung on and maybe put a few more saves on the board. Who knows what could have happened then. But it was a great time to go, and I have no regrets.
Okay, let's have some fun, because people have asked me over the years, do you have a favorite call? And sure I do. I have a number of favorite calls. But nobody's asked me, have you ever had a favorite inning? Well, let me tell the fans right now as I bow out. Yes, I had one favorite inning in my 36 years. It was last year with hockey coach Tom Henke. Honest to goodness, Tom, you and I laughed from top to bottom in that inning. John Brio brought you in, and you had just come from Iceland or somewhere where John had told me you were a hockey coach. And it kind of started off with, Tom, I know you as a closer. I know all you did here with the Blue Jays. You're a hockey coach? And after that, you just went with that, and we had more fun.
Oh, well, you know, Jerry, I'm still undefeated with the Caps. And you know, I know it's kind of hard to believe, but, you know, John's a pretty good recruiter, and he recruited me as a coach a long time ago and been with them for a number of years. And we just have fun. We go over to Europe and all over the place and play a game that I really, if I'm really honest, didn't know a whole lot about. But I'm learning. And I don't call it quarters anymore. I call it periods. So, you know, it shows that I can be taught. But we had fun. You know, just getting up in the booth with you and you know, when Tom was there. And I had so many good memories of Toronto and the fans and you guys. I mean, you always treated me fair, good or bad. And you were always fair with me. And you know, that's why we become friends. You know, it's just not a business acquaintance. It's a friendship that will last forever.
It really will, Coach.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm still, I coached the Fantasy League team, too, and we won it all last year. So I'm a world champion in the Fantasy League team, too, so with the Cardinals. So, you know, the coaching is there. It's just an untapped resource that people might want to pay attention to. So.
Well, Tom, you'll enjoy this to wrap it up with you, because in our friendship with John Cerruti, and God bless him, John passing away in 04, I know the two of you went to a movie. And you came out after the movie, and John looked at you and he said, Tom, from now on, because of this movie, you're the Terminator. And that's where that came to be, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. John and I were, you know, God bless him, he was dear friend, it was somebody that always called every year just to see how everybody was doing. And John and I, in 1985, we went and seen the movie The Terminator together. We were both in Syracuse, and I was having a pretty good year down there. And he goes, man, you're just like that Terminator guy. You know, you just don't take any prisoners. It kind of stuck, and I've told people I've been called a lot worse, especially in Boston and New York and stuff. So you know, it was something that was fun that still kind of sticks with me. People see me and they call me the Terminator, so it's fun and it's good. You know, it's always great to come back to Canada. The people are so great to me up there. Everywhere I go, people treat me so good. I don't know if they understand, it was such a pleasure for me to play there and and to bring a world championship, the first world championship out of the United States into Canada, and bring that home for the Toronto fans and all the Canadian fans that followed us. It's something I'll always remember.
Well, Tom, I love you like a brother. Say hi to Kathy for me. Give her a hug and your kids as well. And thanks for coming on here on my special day.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Jerry. I wouldn't have missed it for the world. And you give the family a big hug for me. And we'll be talking to you. Give me a shout sometime, and we'll get a chance to really catch up.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, my friend.
Take care. Tom Hankey, the Terminator.
Big heart. And you talk about lack of an ego. That was Tom. It was never about Tom, and yet it was always about him because of the closer's role and how he responded to that. But he took it all in stride in a very modest and humble way.
We will step away and take a break. When we come back, we'll go back to the phone lines, 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. The Hour of Howarth continues on The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Time is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now back to the Hour of Howarth on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We even, when we're watching games on TV, we turn down the volume, don't tell Buck and Tabby. And
we crank
up the radio. Or when we're at games, we take our little rabbit ear transistor radio and our earbuds, because without you, the experience just isn't the same. So we love you. We wish you all the very best in your retirement, but we hope that this isn't going to mean full retirement, and that Rogers and Sportsnet and the Blue Jays organization will make you broadcaster emeritus.
A lot of emotions around here today. A lot of emotions in Toronto in general. The voice of the Blue Jays, Jerry Howarth, stepping down after 36 seasons. And I just said, every time I say 36, I just shake my head.
I do too. And Annie's words right there too keep echoing through my mind. And Sweet Home Chicago is one of my favorite songs as well. They play that after every Blackhawks win. And my son's a season ticket holder over there. We have two boys. Ben lives in Chicago with our 20-month-old grandson, Colson, and Joe and his wife, Kathy, live here with our 4-month-old son, grandson, Wesley. But in Chicago, they've had 3 Stanley Cups, and all of a sudden, Ben, who grew up here and didn't see a Stanley Cup, he sees 3 of them already in Chicago.
As a Blackhawks fan, all I can tell you is you just got to pick the right team.
And look at it this way, too, and this is what sports is all about. The Blackhawks now are in last place in their division in the conference. Well, those players, they can't go on forever. And as a result, it's time for probably some changes there. But how many players can lay claim to 1 Stanley Cup ring, let alone 3 with Taves and Kane and all the rest of them? It's been a remarkable time in Chicago. And now, Jeff, with what I see, and I'm not a hockey person, but when I see Mike Babcock and the GM and everything being put together here with Matthews and Marner and everybody else, I think the same thing will happen right here that happened in Chicago.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think more and more people realize that. We got a lot of calls you want to get through. I want to get through these quickly because a lot of you have been very patient. Blake in Uxbridge, thanks for your patience. You're on with Jerry Howarth.
Hi, Jerry. I want to thank God for your life and for everything that he's provided for you and through you to us. I was born in 1970, and I don't think people realize or remember that even up to 1983, when I first started really getting into baseball, that there were so few games on TV to watch. So if you wanted to hear every game for the Blue Jays, you had to tune into the radio, and your integrity and your professionalism are unmatched. So I really thank God for that and everything that you've been able to offer us.
It's really well said. thank you, Blake.
Blake, thank you very much. And what I remember about that time too, Jeff and Blake, is that when Tom and I first started on the radio, we did all 162 games. But on television, there were 3 different networks and 3 different sets of broadcasters. So when you talk about being comfortable and an old shoe, Tom and I were that. Whereas on television, it kept rotating among the different announcers and networks. So that made it a very good situation for us, too, where fans could really say they're part of our family.
Andrew in Toronto, how are you, my friend?
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Jerry. Thank you for giving me an audience today.
Actually, I was late for my first period, the phys ed class, as I was listening in waiting for my turn, but we're here now and we're up and running. I just wanted to thank you. I played for Father John Redmond varsity basketball for 4 years, and I remember you distinctly coaching the junior team. Every single year, our first exhibition game, our preseason game, was against ECI and your lovely green jerseys. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's amazing that you have the ability to make an impact both in sport and in the community of sport in multiple sports, whether that's basketball, whether that's baseball, and even your input into hockey shows me as a fan that you have a connection to that game as well. So myself, because I played baseball, because I played basketball, I now work in sports management representing young hockey players the same age that you would coach. I just want to say thank you for the inspiration that you passed on through me. And actually, you know, I have my students here. I actually just assembled our school. I'm going to step in here and just put you on speakerphone for a second, and they're going to give you a thank you from Kingdom Covenant Academy here in Mississauga. Wow. Because through me, you're going to inspire the next generation of young athletes. So, guys, I'm going to put you on speaker here. I want you to say thank you, Jerry, and you know what to do from here. 1, 2, 3.
Thank you, Jerry.
Wow, that is very heartfelt. Andrew, thank you very much. I remember going to Father Redmond for all those basketball games and tournaments, and Martin Fraser was the junior coach, and then you moved to your new school as well, the new campus down there by Lakeshore and Hummer College. And so, Andrew, that's very nice. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, guys. You know what? I really appreciate it, and all the best to you in your retirement. And all these guys here, they're going to be watching and listening to Blue Jays games with you in our heart, as will I going forward. So thank you once again.
Thanks, Andrew. That's welcome. Terrific. Thank you, Andrew in Toronto. So there you go.
Well,
your teams, what type of style did they play? Are you a pressing guy, or were you a half-court guy?
It was defense first, mm-hmm. and originally it was man-to-man. And then I kept seeing that our teams were getting beat too badly. So we went to a 2-3 zone and began to compete very well and stayed in a lot of games and won our share of games. Then in a game against Richview, they scored 16 threes and one of their players had 8 of those threes. And the next year I went to an aggressive 1-3-1 defense, half-court trapping. Mm-hmm. In fact, sometimes full-court trapping. And that's what I used the balance of my career. And I always felt, too, that if in the league we held the league opponents to the fewest of points, which we usually did, we would be able to compete for the playoffs, which we usually did all the time. And on offense, I wanted to share the ball. It was kind of like what the Raptors are doing this year. You had to make 3 or 4 passes, and we ended up with a lot of layups. There was no 24-second clock, save for when we went to Father Redmond when they ran the 24-second clock. But it was a 1-3-1 trapping zone. If you could play defense and hustle, you were going to start and play a lot. And then after that, we took our games and won them 40-38, 50-45. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of games I wanted. I didn't want to even win 80-78. That wasn't my style.
I'll tell you why I asked that question. Our next guest, Eric Smith, is our Raptors radio voice on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Hello, Eric.
Jeff, how are you doing? And Jerry, I wanted to call in, and I want to keep it quick because I know there are a lot of fans and listeners that want to get in line. So I don't want to take up too much time, but I had to say, Jeff, when I first had a chance to finally meet Jerry, it was just like being a fan because, you know, he was the voice for my childhood growing up and listening to Blue Jay games in the Smith household with my mom and dad and my brother. We're a baseball family, and it's funny getting a chance to get to know Jerry over the years and to talk with him more. The parallels, even personally, let alone professionally, that I kind of felt with him as he's a baseball broadcaster, but a basketball coach, and as a basketball broadcaster, but even a baseball coach at a much smaller level now, coaching my son and growing up with the game of baseball. That was my game growing up, even more so than basketball. So I can appreciate the love for another sport and how entrenched you get with another sport, even if your profession brings you somewhere else. And it's been an honor to work alongside Jerry over the years to get to know him a little bit on a personal level as well. And Jerry, I know you're not a social media guy, but I put this out on Twitter about a half hour or so ago, and you know I said this to your face a few years ago. I still have an open invite to you. Heck, you can come tonight if you want, if you're still in Toronto. I want you to call a game with me. Sit in there with me and Jonesy. Call a quarter, call a half, call the whole game if you want, and get yourself a broadcast on the NBA side under your belt before you officially retire, because I want you to be able to call the game that I know you love as well as a coach, let alone as a fan.
Well, Eric, not tonight, but I will definitely take you up on sitting next to you. And a great story about Eric, and this is how other-directed he is. I believe it was last year that the Raptors were out in Salt Lake City playing the Utah Jazz. And Eric sends me an email and he says, Jerry, I'm having dinner here with Frank Layden. Now, Layden came there with the Jazz when I was there in 1979 as the general manager and later their head coach. And he became not only a great friend, but he also became an inspiration to stay with baseball, Jerry, and stay in the mainstream because I've heard about you as a broadcaster and you can be a major league broadcaster. That motivated me to move from the Chamber of Commerce back to the Utah Jazz and help me in my career. And Eric, you set that up. I talked to Frank and sent him an email, and I appreciated that.
Well, I'll tell you, Jeff, I'll just quickly say as well, if anybody's ever had a chance to listen to Frank Layden, let alone actually meet him or sit and have dinner with him, I was a sponge. I sat at that table and just listened to him for 2 hours as he waxed poetic on every single topic under the sun, and his wife just trying to shut him up just to take a bite of food. But when the conversation turned to Jerry, the smile that Frank always has grew even bigger because, he was speaking with just such admiration and pride for the type of person, the type of man, let alone the type of broadcaster that that Jerry was and certainly still is. So I was happy to be able to make that connection for you, Jerry, and I'll let it go now so other folks can get in. But I wanted to weigh in and just say you're a hell of a man and a hell of a broadcaster, and you'll certainly be missed, Jerry.
It's tough here. Let's bring in Mike in Waterloo. How are you, my friend?
Good morning, Jerry.
Hi, Mike.
It's an emotional day, but I want to thank you for my friend sent you a letter, and you got us to meet Jesse Barfield because we were the guys with the Jesse Barfield banner. I don't know if you remember that, the big Jesse Barfield banner in the Jesse days.
Yes, I do.
And you got us to meet him, and he signed it for us and everything. And I just wanted to thank you for that. And we have made, Jerry, over the years, we have made cassette tapes of your calls because in Waterloo here, we gather around the radio just to hear you. And God bless you, Jerry, and thank you for all you radio days you've done for us, and keep well, and thanks a lot, Jerry. We love you in Waterloo. Take care. Thanks, Jeff. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Mike.
Mike, thank you, and I'm probably one of the few listeners who actually knows what a cassette tape is.
No, I do.
You do, too.
Oh, yes. I can remember rewinding them with the pen. Remember the pencil you had to rewind?
Yes, I do. I'm old school. I always have been, and it's worked for me, but Mike, appreciate that.
That's great. Travis, let's go to, we've kind of morphed it into basketball and baseball now. So this is another perfect guest, Dan Shulman, joining us. Dan, thanks so much for taking time out of your day today to talk to Jerry.
Jerry, how are you? I wanted to, I know you got a lot of people lined up. I just wanted to say a couple of really quick things if I can. And Jeff, you know this as well as I do. Jerry, you've done, I guess, by my math, 5,000-6,000 baseball games. And you put everything you had into every single game. And that's not always the easiest thing to do. You know, you're traveling time zones and you're tired or they're out of the race or whatever the case may be. But as much as anything, I think you deserve to be commended because if anybody only heard you do one game in their whole lives, whatever game it was, they would have gotten your very best. And I think you should be commended for that. And on a quick side note, I don't know if I've ever told you this, Jerry. Back in the 80s when I was at Western, my buddies and I were in a rotisserie baseball league. And it was the Jerry Howarth League. That was the name of our league. It was a different poking fouls, the there she goes, the yes sirs, and I was the hello friends. So for years, every time we went into the draft, and my buddy Rob and I were on a team together, every time we went into the draft, we all thought of you because all 12 teams were named after a saying of yours. But I remember the first time going in the booth with you and Tom back in 1991, I believe it was, maybe 92. And that's one of the highlights of my career was, being welcomed into the booth and how well you guys treated me. And we've all been very lucky to have you with us for 36 years.
Well, Dan, I appreciate that. And I appreciate you, too, because when you started from Western to Barry and then you came in and I believe you got in touch with Scott Metcalf, who gave you some volunteer work or you were an intern. And then to grow into the broadcaster you were with the Blue Jays and now Sunday Night Baseball. In all of that, you have remained exactly the same self-effacing person. The modesty came out then, still does now. It's never been about you. And Dan, for all your stardom and acclaim, that's what I remember most about you.
Well, I appreciate that. I can honestly say I learned a lot of that from you because that's the way that you are. And I remember those days back when the games weren't on TV all the time and falling asleep to West Coast games. When I was a teenager listening to the radio all the time or working as a lifeguard for a number of years. And when the baseball came on, Q107 went off and the baseball game came on. That's the way that's the way that it worked, and you're a huge part of Toronto's baseball history.
Well, I thank you for that, and keep working like you do with two people in the booth. For me, it was always highlighting one. You do it with two, Dan, and you've done it with so many different people across your career. And I met Dick Vitale years ago, and he sent me some basketballs and was turned out to be a great friend. I would see him in Sarasota every year. From Dick Vitale to Jim Hunt to so many others, you made it happen for them.
Well, I appreciate that. As you know as well as I do, we're blessed to be able to work in this field.
Thanks, Danny. Take care.
Thank you. Yeah. And say hi to Lauren for me.
I will. Take care.
Dan Shulman, the great Dan Shulman. Well, this gentleman used to be on all the time. I can remember hearing him. Nelson Melman. How are you, my friend? Former program director here.
A former idiot program director, get it right, Blair.
Why should I start now? It's worked for seven
I'm
years.
I'm on with the Jerry Howard following the Dan Shulman.
That's not bad.
I am so far out of my league.
Well, Nelson, before you say anything more, thank you for your friendship. As we sat across the desk for so many years, you let me be me. You let me broadcast the games with Tom and everybody else. You always were supportive. Your daughter Haley had some difficult times in the hospital, and I remember going to see her and your other daughter, Stephanie, of course, your wife, Susan. And those were critical times for me, for her, and seeing how you handled that as a family man. But you always made me feel like it was a family, too, and I always welcome that.
Well, you know, I didn't know you were going to be on, Jerry, because, frankly, I'm playing golf, but kicked the last putt in, and I wasn't going to talk about what you did on the air as much as what you did off the air, you were so good to me and my family, and that support has never wavered, and you know how much my daughter thinks of you, and you know how much we think of you, and to me, what always impressed me, and letting you guys do your thing on the air was easy. I just tried to stay out of the way, and you know, we won't talk about some of the meetings we had, but what was I going to tell Tom and Jerry? But it's what you did off the air, your basketball coaching and all the charity work you do, and never made a big deal out of it. You just did it. And if people knew, great. And if they didn't know, that was fine too. And to me, that stuff's so much more important than anything we do as broadcasters. But at the end of the day, I didn't hire you and I didn't hire Tom. But if there was a better broadcast anywhere in baseball, I didn't hear it. And I listened to quite a few, and I think baseball was Tom and Jerry. And when we lost Tom, you stepped up, but it was so easy for me. I just let you guys do your thing. And I'm sure that you've probably talked about, the World Series in 92 when you stepped away from the mic, and what was your inning to let Tom do that. And I'm not sure a lot of other broadcasters would have done that.
Nelson, thank you very much.
Nelson, thanks for joining us, man. Good to hear from you.
Okay, boys, you have fun. Jerry, we will miss you, but we will be in touch.
All right, thanks, and we definitely will. Say hi to Haley for me.
Nelson Melman, former program director here. We could go on for another couple of hours, but I have to share you with some other people. Jerry, listen, first of all, it was a great honor that you chose this show to announce your retirement. I wish you weren't retiring, and I think that's heartfelt. But I enjoy the hour of Howarth. I always tell people I enjoyed that more than anything I've done on this show. And I wish you and Mary and the kids. I wish you all the best. And I'll tell you, anytime you want to come in, that chair's open for you.
Well, I will definitely anytime. Be here, because with your friendship and this show, best time for me outside the baseball play-by-play booth, and I've enjoyed every minute, including today, and I thank you for setting it up with Dave Cadeau.
Thank you very much, Jerry. It's been great.
You're welcome.
Take care. Jerry Howarth stepping down after 36 seasons behind the mic as the voice of the Toronto Blue Jays. Stephen Brunt joins us. It's the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Good times never seem so good.
good. So good. So good.
It's the radio show in podcast form. The Starting Lineup with Brady and Price. Available at iTunes or with your podcatcher of choice. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. George T. Stagg Bourbon, 140 proof. Poured over one ice cube, not two. Now, you can buy him a drink. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show. You know, you can continue to get your comments out there, your thoughts out there about Jerry Howarth on Twitter. And we ask you, if you do it, or as you're doing it, you use the hashtag #ThankYouJerry. And we had it trending earlier. I believe it's still trending in Toronto. So keep it up, as we mentioned before the last break. A real privilege that Jerry Howarth chose our show to announce that he was stepping down after 36 seasons. Of course, like the rest of you, I would just assume he was choosing it to announce that he was going to be around for another 36 seasons. But there we are. We're going to be joined by Matt Devlin. The Raptors played their 1,000th game tonight against the Miami Heat. And Matt Devlin will join us. He is, of course, our play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. Also, he's also done an awful lot of baseball play-by-play as well. So we'll talk to Matt at 11:35. We've got a couple of tickets to give away. It is Ticket Tuesday. We will endeavor to do that just before we bring Matt on. And to get us there, I'm very pleased to bring in Stephen Brunt of Sportsnet, my co-host and author extraordinaire. Stephen's written a terrific article on Jerry Howarth on the Sportsnet website. And Stephen, you can imagine we just had a little ceremony out here, a little bit of champagne for Jerry, a hearty round of applause from everybody who was in the building. Just calling it the end of an era kind of doesn't do it justice, does it?
No, it's a special, it's a different kind of relationship. And it's funny, I've listened all 2 hours of the show today, and it's, you and I had a little heads up that this was coming, obviously. You know, your piece and my piece on the website didn't just appear magically in the last hour, but really only a short heads up. And it's, we've been processing this for a couple of days now, and I was interested in what the reaction would be like, and I expected it to be really strong and really emotional. Mm-hmm. Because it's, baseball, we both have kicked this around. Boy, baseball is different, and broadcasting baseball is different. The nature of the long season, the space between plays, and the intimacy of radio, especially. Jerry's relationship with the people who listen to him is different. It's on a different level, and I know it's a kind of a one-way conversation most of the time, but you and I have seen people come up to Jerry over the years. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to some of the callers, in addition to kind of Jerry's famous friends, folks who just listened to him over the years, calling in and saying, do you remember this and do you remember that? And I've seen Jerry in those conversations a million times, where someone comes up to him and says, we met once 10 years ago, and I was the guy who had the sign, and you said this, and his ability to kind of maintain that side of the relationship, to sincerely, note and remember details about people's lives, it's, extraordinary. Like, that's one small facet of Jerry Howarth, professionally and personally. Mm-hmm. But it's one that's always struck me, Jeff.
Yeah, and, it's, and again, I'm, I'm of the era where, where I grew up. I mean, I learned my baseball on the radio, right? Because there were, two channels. The Expos were the only team in town. I mean, we used to listen to Minnesota Twins games on a repeater station from Langdon, North Dakota. So, all my various summer jobs, including one working at a beach. I mean, Herb Carneal was the soundtrack to sort of my my childhood summers. And then I moved to Montreal, and it was, you know, Dave Van Horn, and then, of course, coming here, Tom and Jerry, and then after Tom passed away, Jerry. But, you know, I made the point in the piece I wrote today that I still hear snippets of all those voices when it doesn't matter who's calling the game. I can be listening to it, and I will still hear snippets of their voices. And I think that's the impact that those voices have on you, you know, especially if you grew up where radio was how you consume baseball.
Well, think of how many people are listening to this show today for whom Jerry has been calling games their entire lives. Let's start with that,
yeah.
Right? That there are people who have never known, a Blue Jay play-by-play guy other than Jerry Howarth, maybe Tom Cheek, depending on how old they are. But that only, you know, the two play-by-play broadcasters, two broadcasters, encompass the entire 40-year history of this team. And baseball on radio, baseball on television is a fantastic thing in its own right, and people calling games on television do a fantastic job, but there are pictures, you know, and it's different, and it's still fundamentally different than, say, calling a hockey game or calling a football game or calling a basketball game, where you often have kind of continuous action where, you know, your voice is supposed to mirror the emotion of what's going on. But if there's baseball, there's a lot of nothing. there's most baseball games are filled with moments when nothing at all is happening,
mm-hmm.
and that leaves the broadcaster bare, naked, and, you know, there to spin a tale and to relate to the people listening and to be able to, you know, pull a great home run call out of his ear when needs be. But to call games that mean something or don't mean something in seasons that mean something or don't mean something, you know, and it's great. You know, we'll all know Jerry. You know, Jerry called the bat flip home run, right? And he called mm-hmm. Edwin's home run in the wild card game. But he also called a lot of games where, you know, not much happened.
Right.
And yet, he was in those moments. Still, he was kind of part of the texture of people's lives. You know, baseball in the background in summer, baseball, you know, on the radio when you're driving in the car. All kinds of people always say, you know, baseball at the cottage when I'm sitting on the dock. That's, you know, that's different than, you know, than calling a period of hockey or a quarter of football or a quarter of basketball. It's that's a lot more time. It's a lot more space, and the relationship, I think, is different. You know, you don't broadcast at people in baseball. It's kind of a participatory thing. It's more of a shared experience on some level.
Yeah, and you know, that I've always thought the club broadcaster kind of walk kind of a fine line, because you are the keeper of secrets. You are the dropper of hints. You see a lot of things because of the access you have. You see and hear a lot of things that aren't meant for public consumption, but at the same time, you've got to stay true to yourself when you paint the picture of the game. And boy, that's an art form to be able to do that for 36 years and have pissed off very few people.
You know, we've talked about this, I think, you know, off the air as well. You know, when Jerry comes on and does the hour with you, which is a great hour of radio, I think people come to understand more how much Jerry knows about what's going on with the team,
right?
Because it's a different forum. And but Jerry, you know, Jerry Howarth knows more about what's going on and has known more about what was going on with the Blue Jays than anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just because he's, you know, a nice guy hanging around. He works really hard. He's extraordinarily professional and extraordinarily thorough. And all of those kind of smiling conversations on the field before batting practice and walking through the clubhouse and, you know, spring training and, you know, all of that stuff that looks like nothing, that's Jerry. That was Jerry kind of compiling his dossier, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, filling up the files. And so what came through on the air is, you're right, you can't, the play-by-play guy's job is not to have hot takes. That's not how it works. But it's, you know, sometimes it's between the lines. But, you know, Jerry's opinion is the most informed opinion out there.
Right.
You know, you're right. He has a relationship with the fans. He also has a relationship with the team, a day-to-day relationship with the team. And people do share things with him. And, you know, he's incredibly close with John Gibbons, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he knows more about what makes John Gibbons tick than any of us do. But, you know, you still got to be the guy every day, you know, kind of telling the balanced story, not getting too high or too low, and and kind of picking your spots. And again, I think, you know, if I really want to know what's going on with the Jays, Jerry would be a guy I would pull aside and say, Jerry, what about this?
Mm-hmm.
Because I 100% trust his opinion.
Yeah, and it's the other thing Jerry's always managed to do is not put himself front and center. It's almost as if he uses being in the background as a way of getting information.
I think that's the art, you know. You know, my friend Bob Cole, you know, again, hockey is very different, but he always said that if he knew that he'd done a good job if no one talked about the broadcast.
Right.
You know, that you became one with the game, that your voice becomes one with the game, and all they talk about is the game. They don't talk about you. And I think that's true. You know, and look, everybody I know can do a Jerry Howarth impression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody can do one of the catchphrases. You know, I heard Danny Shulman on talking about how fantasy baseball and all the teams being named after Jerry phrases, which is great. So we've all got that. But, you know, mostly we were talking about, you know, again, he's kind of part of the texture of the Blue Jays. He's, you know, and we can, you know, some of that history is glorious and some of it was kind of depressing and you know, everything in between. And it's, you know, we can all kind of pull little bits of Jerry out of that, but he's, in a lot of ways, he's kind of inextricable from the team, right? He's part of it. You know, and again, that doesn't mean you're a homer. You know, it means you've become part of the story.
Right. We are on the eve of spring training, and, you know, it's going to seem strange not to see Jerry down there, but
yep.
We are in the eve of spring training. Still a lot of free agents out on the market. It looks like the Jays, you know, from all indications, are interested in adding another starting pitcher. Look, a lot can happen between now and opening day. None of it good for the most part. But where do you see this team right now, Stephen? Is it there's still a kind of a sense that it's incomplete, is there not?
Yep. But, you know, like, again, we're kind of redefining how to, you know, slow playing the market this year, aren't we? Mm-hmm. Like the whole sport is slow play in the market, so it's you know, it's odd to be a day before pitchers and catchers report and still talking about, you know, some really significant guys still on the market, because there's, you know, some of the biggest free agent names are still out there. I think they'll add a starting pitcher. I think they would like to add a starting pitcher on a 1-year deal. They might have to take 2 years. There's still some, you know, the names are obvious, and you know, mm-hmm. some of them are sexier than others, and some of them are kind of rebound prospects, but you know, you're looking at a fifth guy, and that's so that, you know, you could get lucky. I think they've managed to get through this winter without giving up, you know, too much of their immediate future, the exciting immediate future.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if Aaron Sanchez's blister holds up and the rotation holds up, I think the rotation is the key, because that's their strength. You can make the case that their rotation is as good as or better as any in the American League East. Still got to score runs. They didn't score any runs last year. But they're going to be better defensively, you know, certainly better defensively in the outfield one way or another. And I think they'll be, you know, we will have to, I don't know if Tulo's going to be able to start the season or not. We don't know about Devin Travis, but they're covered there a little bit better. So I think it really comes down to the starting pitching, and which could be really good. And if it's really good, then I think the bullpen is fine. And then I think you can hang around and we'll have an interesting discussion come mid-season. But you know, but if Aaron Sanchez, you know, walks off the mound 2 innings into his first start, then we're not going to have that conversation.
Right. I find it interesting, too, that, you know, the Yankees made a lot of news in the offseason getting Giancarlo Stanton, and rightly so. But if you look around this division, I mean, I've got to tell you, I expected to see the Red Sox do more. Now, I know they have a really good team, but they still have some holes. I expected to see them do more. The Yankees still may add another. Well, there's a story out there that the Yankees, if they can move Jacoby Ellsbury, would love to add J.D. Martinez, which, you know, is like a little bit of overload. But I look around this division, I look around the teams that are going to contend for the wild card spot, and other than the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, I don't see a team that has demonstrably improved in this league, other than the Yankees.
You know, like the Twins have made efforts too, right? Like they've certainly been in on a bunch of guys. You know, in the other league, it's amazing what they're doing in Milwaukee, the kind of all-in thing in Milwaukee.
Yep.
But there's no real equivalent to that in the American League this year. And, you know, Otani's going to be a big story in California, right? So we'll see what he looks like and what he turns into. But you're right. There's been this economic sea change in baseball. And I know the players feel like it's quasi collusion. I think it's more about everybody having the same valuations of players that they see aging players as assets, and everybody sees them the same way now. So no one's really blown their brains out. And that's part of why the playing field still, I know people saying it seems level might be an overstatement, but even with the Yankees having done what they've done, it's not, to me, they don't appear invincible, because I don't think their pitching's invincible,
right?
Like, they're starting pitching. So yeah, they could have signed Darvish or done something along those lines, and I guess Arrieta, but they didn't kind of double down or triple down, or at least they haven't so far.
Mr. Brunt, we're going to let you scoot. Appreciate you doing this as always.
Hey, see you soon, Jeff.
Take care. Stephen Brunt. Stephen will be alongside me the first week in March as we take the Jeff Blair Show down to spring training, down to lovely, sunny Dunedin. Mr. Brunt will be there. We'll have, we got two, count them, two wireless mics this time. Travis, two wireless mics. I'm excited about that. So that means I can roam around the field and interrupt people doing stuff. It's tremendous. I know, I probably shouldn't. People don't really need to. No, we're going to use it. Brunt's, we're each going to have mics. Oh, yeah. Oh, dog, we're each going to have mics. That's going to be great. It's going to be twice, double your pleasure. Anyhow, whatever. We appreciate Stephen Brunt joining us. Stephen's got a terrific article up on Jerry Howarth right now. I've got an article up as well on Jerry Howarth. We mentioned Jerry Howarth announcing today that he is stepping down from behind the microphone after 36 years as the voice of the Blue Jays. And Brunt's right. There's an entire, it's almost two generations of fans who were raised with Jerry as their Blue Jays voice. And it's remarkable. We wish Jerry nothing but happiness in his retirement. And my guess is the Hour of Howarth will be resurrected in some form or another. I mean, I'll go out on a limb and say that, that the Hour of Howarth will be resurrected in some form. I don't imagine you'll see Jerry step away from things totally. We've got a couple of tickets to tonight's Heat and Raptors game. This is the thousandth Raptors game tonight? Thousandth Raptors home game. Okay, that's better, because I was sitting there thinking, what the hell? The 1,000th Raptors home game tonight is against the Miami Heat, and we want to send you and a friend to see the game. It is Ticket Tuesday. We've got a pair of tickets to give away to see the Raptors and the Heat tonight at the Air Canada Centre. You can catch the game as well on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 1. Sportsnet 1's pregame will be at 6:30 p.m. Tip-off just after 7 on both Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 1. We got to come up with the trivia question for this, Travis. Come up with a trivia question right now. It's the 1,000th home game. It's a 1,000th home game. I'm counting on you. We could do it after the break. Why don't we do it after the break? Why don't we do it after the break? Because I'm not just going to give away. It's not like I'm going to give away two tickets to see the Raptors and Heat. I'm not. This should be a good game, by the way. The Heat came in here and beat the Raptors. And in case you've forgotten, that was the game where Serge Ibaka and James Johnson were both thrown out of the game for throwing punches, or at least squaring up to each other. It was the game where, if you remember, DeMar DeRozan and Goran Dragic squared up to each other, the final horn. The Miami Heat treated that game, and their coach Eric Spoelstra said this after the game, the Miami Heat treated that game like it was a playoff game. Well, no, let me rephrase that, because he was very clear. They didn't treat it like it was a playoff game, but he said there was a different tone to the warm-up. There was a different feel in the dressing room. The Miami Heat wanted to go out and lay down a bit of a marker to the Raptors. And I'll tell you this right now, it is the team I would not want to face if I'm the Raptors in the East. they were so impressive the way they got on the Raptors' faces. They were so impressive the way they got them out of off their game. I don't want any part of the Miami Heat in the first couple of rounds, or the first round at least, of the playoff series. Again, we've got a couple of tickets to give away to the Raptors and Heat. We'll do it on the other side of the break when Matt Devlin joins us as the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good show, good podcast. Subscribe to podcasts of Good Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I've been working all night long. I put my daughter on my knee. And she said, "Daddy, what's wrong?" She whispered in my ear so sweet. You know what she said? She said,
welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Hockey Central at noon is just around the corner. As you heard during the last break, we will have tonight's Raptors-Miami Heat game on Sportsnet 590. The Fan and Sportsnet 1, the 1,000th home game in Raptors history. 6:30 will be the pregame on Sportsnet 1. Tip-off will be just after 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 590, The Fan of Sportsnet 1. We have a pair of tickets to give away to this game, which we will do now, but you're going to have to answer a trivia question to get it. And this one might be a stumper. Dwayne Wade, of course, is back with the Miami Heat, and no surprise, he leads that franchise in games played. With 856. Who is second on the Miami Heat in games played for the Miami Heat? 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Let's take the third caller through. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Dwayne Wade has played the most Miami Heat games in franchise history. Who played or has played the second most? It's one of those great sort of eclectic sports lists, right? So again, third caller through. You know that Dwayne Wade has played the most Miami Heat games in franchise history. That's easy enough. We don't want to know who's played the most games in Heat history. We want to know who has played the second most games. If you're the third caller through, you'll win a pair of tickets to see the Raptors and the Heat tonight at the Air Canada Center. Matt Devlin is our Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. Matt Devlin joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Good morning, Mr. Devlin.
Good morning. If you don't mind, before we talk Raptors, wanted to, certainly wish Jerry all the best. And you, I think, know this story of a young baseball announcer back in 1993. I was calling games for the Palm Springs Angels for $800 a month, 142 games solo by myself. They were a Cal League affiliate of the California Angels at that time, and on an off day or any off day, and there'd only be about five or six of them, I'd always drive into Anaheim and ask the announcers if I could sit in the back of the booth. And at that time it was Bob Starr and Billy Sample for the Angels, and then I'd spend time in the visitors booth as well if they were nice enough to have me. And Tom and Jerry were, and from that meeting I ended up getting a scorecard from Tom Cheek, which I used for I cannot tell you how many years, as well as pre
internet how he would keep track of everything. He, you know, ripped out a scorecard for me and the different stat sheets that he would keep at the time and the system that he used, which I used throughout my minor league baseball announcing career and then into, you know, the major league games that I've done through the years. And then also Jerry said to me, you know, Matt, send me a cassette tape and I'll critique it for you. And at the time, you know, Jeff, I was horrible. I mean, I really was. It was my first full-time job announcing play-by-play. And Jerry was nice enough, took the time. I still have the letter to this day. It was on World Series Blue Jays letterhead, and I keep it. And I've shown it to him, you know, a few years ago when I've had the opportunity to call Jays games every now and again. So he's a wonderful voice, and there is a connection, you know, clearly, because he took the time with a youngster to help him out in his career, and that happens to be me. And there is, as you well know, I think baseball, without question, is the best sport on radio because it's a team sport, but yet it's a singular act. Right. Every play is a singular act, and there's no connection like a radio baseball announcer with the hometown fans in any other medium as far as, you know, a sport is concerned.
No, and I can say, too, that one of the things I noticed about Jerry is when I started doing this, and you actually, you did the same thing as well, there's a real mentorship in the in this industry. And one of the things Jerry did when I started out is Jerry, in his own sort of Jerry way, would come up to me around the batting cage and say, now, listen, I heard you say this, and you need to, you should have said it this way. You know, Jerry's always on me, shorter questions, which, you know, is clearly it ain't working. But that was, and it was interesting because he would approach you, and it, Jerry's shorter than me. He would approach you and kind of, you know, he had that stance that was kind of spread out and arms out front, like he's a basketball coach. I'm like, okay, I'm going to tell you now how we're going to make this work. And he was really giving and has always been giving. And as I said, that mentorship's important. And Matt, as you well know, it doesn't matter what age you are. You need a mentor when you're 56 and when you're 26. You do.
Well, there's no question about that. And, you know, through the years, you know, I told him, you know, as I stepped into a Jays booth to call a game, it takes me right back to 1993 and meeting Tom and Jerry. And we still had that, you know, connection. There is something special, as I said, about a hometown radio announcer and their team. And there's a phenomenal book years ago called The Voices of the Game. And if you're passionate about baseball and voices of the, and ultimately voices of the game, it's a great read. And as a young announcer, I ended up finding a source that had all these old cassette tapes of Red Barber and Mel Allen. And I purchased them to listen to them, how they call the game, because it truly is an art form. And when you have the ability to create a picture in one's mind of what is unfolding in front of you, it is a craft. And that was something that Jerry was certainly one of the best at. And so to me, as a, you know, fellow announcer who was, you know, fortunate enough to be mentored by him and also become a friend, it certainly means a lot.
Let's move on and talk about the Miami Heat and the Raptors a little bit. This game intrigues me, because the last time we saw the Miami Heat come in here, well, they put a physical whooping on the Raptors. That was the Serge Ibaka and James Johnson were both ejected for squaring up to each other, throwing punches. Goran Dragic and DeMar DeRozan sort of squared up to each other on the final play of the game. And, of course, the Heat won that game. You know, and I came away thinking, and I know that you guys talked about this as well, but I came away thinking that that was a team that I'm not certain I really want to see in the first round of the playoffs. Look, the Raptors are good, but I'm not certain I want to see that Heat team early in the playoffs.
Well, I would agree with that. A couple of things. Eric Spoelstra's done a marvelous job this year, and they know how to win when they keep teams under 100. they control tempo. They're 18-6 when they do that, Jeff. So for the Raptors tonight, a team that can play with pace and tempo, they need to force their hand to try to get it to 100+. That last game, it was not. As you mentioned, it was a physical battle, 90-89, played the way the Miami Heat wanted it to be played. And what did they do? They got into DeRozan. They got into Kyle Lowry. It really becomes the formula that we've seen over the years on how to handle the Toronto Raptors. So tonight, who's going to be that third outlet? And then, you know, how significant can the bench be again tonight? Because they've been tremendous. So for the Raptors, you want to see DeMar and Kyle continue to move the basketball the way they have. You want to see in that starting unit a third option really emerge. Is that a Jonas Valanciunas with a Hassan Whiteside? Is it a Serge Ibaka? He really needs to elevate his play and then allow that second unit to do what they need to do. And then ultimately, it's a team that, as we know, late clock, late game situations, they've struggled at times this year. And that game certainly was one of them, where Wayne Ellington drove baseline and got an easy layup to win that game. So, you know, is it a learning moment? We'll find out tonight. A teachable moment? We'll find out tonight.
The Raptors come into this game, which is their 1,000th home game. They've won 5 consecutive games by margin of 15 or more. They've never done that before. They've done it with no starter playing more than 30 minutes in any of their last 4 games, which has got to bring a smile to everybody's face.
Yeah.
And, I mean, over the last 30 years, there have only been a couple of teams that have won 4 straight games where no starter played 30 minutes in a game. So I'm going to ask you this, Matt. As we get ready to celebrate the franchise's 1,000th home game, is this the best Raptors team we've seen?
Well, regular season for sure. However, 2 seasons ago, team made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. And so I think that story is yet to be told. But, you know, this is a team that, as we just stated, from a second unit standpoint, has been exceptional. And it's not any one individual. And I know there's been a lot of chatter and conversation about, you know, what do you do come postseason when you typically go down to 7 or 8? You typically go down to 7 or 8 because, you know, those are your best players. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is, you know, sometimes the 9th and 10th player on this roster have been one of the better players, right, of the night. How do you, you know, say, okay, hey, you're not going to play a DeLon, a Fred, a Pascal, a C.J. Miles, a Jakob Poeltl, because on any given night, one of those players could be your 3rd or 4th or 5th best player. So I think you're going to see them play 10. And, you know, it's a team that, to me, interestingly enough, I want to see some rhythm out of the first unit. And that's not, DeMar's shooting percentage has been down a little bit. He hasn't gotten to the free throw line, but I think a lot of that is just based upon the games. We know how good DeMar is. We know how good Kyle is. OG Anunoby, what happens with him? He left the game with a sprained ankle against Charlotte. Does that mean more playing time now for Norman Powell? Does CJ Miles, do we start seeing him play a little bit more, not taking him out of the second unit, because I think you keep him there. But to me, can his game continue to grow and elevate to the point where you see him on the court with DeRozan, Lowry, Serge, and Jonas Valanciunas? That to me is really intriguing. Why? Because of the 3-point shot. We've seen Jonas understand how to play 25 minutes a night and maximize it. I think he's been great. And so now it's that 3 position and the 4 position, and the 4 position, Serge Ibaka. Can he elevate his game? And if he does that, then I think this team's in a good position.
Where does Norman Powell fit into this, do you think, ultimately? Because to me, he's the guy, because of the season he's had, to me, he's a real wild card here.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I just I hesitate to be that concerned from a regular season standpoint. And the reason why is because over the last 2 years, we've seen him step up in the postseason. Mm-hmm. And how does he step up? He steps up defensively. And ultimately, to me, you know, that's really the key with him. The reality of it is that when Norm plays the three, that's really not his position because of the size. So he's an undersized three. However, he can guard when teams go small threes, but he does a great job locking up ones and twos. And so, you know, to me, that's where you see the benefit of having a Norman Powell on the roster. It just so happens that, you know, he ends up getting injured. It opens up a door for DeLon Wright and for Fred VanVleet. And, you know, the next thing you know, it's hard to get back in. But maybe with OG Anunoby stepping in with the way that he stepped in that top unit, you know, maybe it's time for Norm to step back in and be a piece of this as well. You know, opportunity in the NBA and all professional sports is always right around the corner, as we both know. So I'm not one that says, hey, a guy like Norman Powell is not going to be beneficial for this team, because I've seen him emerge too many times. 2 years ago against Indiana, and what was at that point, you know, a game that was teetering, game five, he gets a steal and a dunk to tie it. And the Raptors never look back on their way to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Matt, it was great of you to join us this morning. Thanks so much.
You got it, buddy. All the best.
Matt Devlin's our Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. He'll have the call of the game tonight. The Raptors play their 1,000th home game against the Miami Heat. Tip-off will be just after 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 590, The Fan on Sportsnet 1, 6:30 p.m. pregame on Sportsnet 1. Eric and Paul will have the call of the game for you on the radio side. Matt Leo and Michael Grange on the TV side. The Raptors 39-16, looking to continue to build on that home court record in what, as we mentioned, is their 1,000th home game in franchise history. They've won five consecutive games, all by a margin of 15 or more points. It's the first time they've done that in franchise history. And as we mentioned, no Raptors starter in any of their last four games has played over 30 minutes. The Raptors have won all those games. And over the last 30 years, only two other teams have won four straight games during which no starter played 30 minutes in a game. That was Brooklyn in January 2014 and the San Antonio Spurs in April 2015. Want to congratulate Graham Smith of Brampton. You are going to tonight's game against the Miami Heat. You correctly identified Udonis Haslam as having played the second most games in Miami Heat franchise history, 838 games, behind Dwayne Wade's 856. Alonzo Mourning is also in that group as well. Alonzo Mourning had 593 games. That's bizarre. I never would have thought Udonis Haslam, but as Travis McKenzie, my producer, points out, I mean, he's been there all along. So there you go. Graham, you were our third caller through, and you are going to see the Raptors and the Miami Heat tonight at the Air Canada Center. Also want to remind you that every weekday from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., you're going to be hearing hourly code word announcements for our Northern Invasion contest. And you can go to sportsnet.ca/590, enter them for a chance to win a trip for two to Washington to see the Raptors play the Wizards on March 2nd, and then see the Maple Leafs play in the March 3rd outdoor game against the Washington Capitals. You can tune in every hour until 6 p.m. for the codes to enter online for your chance to win what we are calling the Northern Invasion Contest with Sportsnet Nation. That is it for us today. I want to thank Jerry Howarth again for choosing this platform to announce that he's stepping down as the voice of the Blue Jays after 36 remarkable seasons. And as I said to Jerry before we let him go, there's always a seat in this studio for Jerry Howarth. That's it for me. Have a great day. Hockey Central at noon is next.